Let's go.
Yo, welcome back to Bingetown TV. The Rooks and Vets are back chatting Carnival Row. This time we're on episode 3, Kingdoms of the Moon. So this episode is a fandom favorite. It's got the second highest ranking on IMDb, but I'm going to go ahead and say it's the favorite episode consensus of the fandom. That's a little bit of a, you know, like Reddit searching. Most people say that. Shout out to Reddit too, by the way. And
great, so all downhill from here, huh?
Yeah, now come on. They're all good. It's just this one, just the whole feel of it, it's just way better.
So what I thought about this episode was if you can get through this episode and you're not in for the show, you're not going to like it, because the entire basis of Carnival Row is on the back of the relationship between Philo and Vignette. And this is the episode that really makes you start to care about their relationship. The plot is really cool. The world building is really cool in the first two episodes, but this is the part that really makes people attached to the show. This is the second time I've seen this episode for the first time, and I thought it was phenomenal. I love it. I can't wait to see more of these two characters now.
Yeah, what a great episode. I'm glad as the veterans, you guys decided to make this a one-off for the pod, because this standalone episode is great. We're just going to dive right into the whole thing. It was great with learning everything that we needed to learn. And it was great as a Rook, because there's really only like four names I need to memorize. And
right.
You know,
finally,
and
I know
have them memorized.
Seems...
I'm good. I'm good now. So
yeah, flashback episodes are what dreams are made of. They really are. This is the episode that made me go, okay, sure. Yeah, I'm in. This is good. Honestly, just a beautiful episode visually as well. Like, it's a really intense episode for just like, they're like meet cute and like, oh, they're falling in love. But like visually, what a gorgeous episode.
Definitely
well.
A Kathleen episode with the loves.
Yeah, we have some scenes specifically set up for Kathleen to walk us through. But I do want to say that I think Vignette steps up so much after this episode.
Big
I care way more about her in the next five episodes going forward than the initial impression. I liked her because I've already seen the show before in the first two, but I could see how people don't. And that's, I think what you said, Kathleen, you gravitated more towards Philo. I think Kyle, you said the same thing early on, but this is the episode that allows Vignette to become a fan favorite.
It's really adding layers to Philo as well. Like all the things you find out about him really speak to how closed off he is later when we're at Carnival Row, actually. So let's get into it.
Let's just do it.
All right. So first scene, we have a really nice shot. There's an army of Burgishmen who are marching through what they tell us is the Tyrannese Highlands in the Kingdom of Anoon. So
it's a hard way.
Yeah.
There's no other.
Yeah.
Be your soldiers of the Berg.
Of the Berg.
So good. Payoff for Darius and Philo's scene in the last episode. And I hope you guys agree, but I think Darius is an awesome character.
Oh, yeah.
He gets a lot more depth in this episode, of course, because he's such a focus. And now you feel bad for him because you know why he's locked up.
Mm-hmm.
And Philo still respects their bond, because he says in the second episode, it easily could have been me in that cage. So this is such a good way to show that their bond is deep. It's a brotherhood of soldiers.
Very interesting, because as a Rook, I assumed they had to make a decision that got them in trouble or something, you know, and it was Darius that took the blame and he's the one in jail now. So it's very interesting to figure out that this is actually the backstory for Darius.
So I watched this episode twice today, and I know we're not at this part, but the first time around, I thought Darius had been a werewolf for a while, because he really came to terms with it very fast. When he was on the beach and woke up, he's like, don't worry, I got a handle on it. Like, if that's your first morning waking up next to a dead ass elk, I don't have a handle on it.
We're
going
to talk about because there's implied time shifts.
They show like the days and everything, the seasons shifting. So there's time. And he also talks about how he knows he's going to be shitting rubber and bones and stuff. So that means he must have already been a werewolf a few times.
Okay, that's what I assumed. And then on the second watch, I kind of went, okay, well, maybe he did just turn into it. I don't know. Anyway, we'll get to it. But Philo with that flow, baby.
Yeah.
That hot boy Philo.
I know. If he wasn't already handsome enough.
Right?
If he wasn't already my type enough.
I feel like Orlando Bloom can pull off anything he wants. Mm. He's got his beard is splotchy. It's not a good beard, but he looks phenomenal still. Like, come on.
Yeah, I didn't know I loved him so much.
Like, Jesus. He's got the muzzy, but he's got patches all over. But I'm like, dude, I'm growing my patch beard now.
I mean, that is the exact beard that I grow. So I don't know how I feel about the way you were just talking about it.
Well, I think you look great too, Kyle.
Thanks, boss. We appreciate that.
Thank you, Senpai.
So, yes, we have a Sergeant Philo, Darius, and a man named Winshaw. That's all they give us is Winshaw. He appears to be like the head guy, because they kind of defer to him to make the big decisions. The whole squad basically rolls up to the gates of this it's a mimisary, but at the time it looks like a kingdom, a castle.
I have it as sanctuary, kind
of. It's like a typical Fae city, we got to assume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it is a mimisary, technically.
Right, because she says this is a spiritual place or something.
Or maybe it's a mimisary in a village. I don't know. This is my issue with the world building a little bit in the show.
Not clear enough, yeah.
Yeah, so the army is eventually let in. They wave a flag. The fairies, the Fae, know that they are Burgishmen. And Winshaw kind of takes the lead, like I said earlier. He explains that due to the Tain Treaty between the Kingdom of Anun and the Burg, that the 13th Light Dragoon are going to commandeer the Mimisary because there is a nearby telegraph line that they need to defend.
Yeah, it's like a lot is happening, and they look up, and the Fae are circling above them like fucking Dementors.
Like hundreds of them.
It's really a dope scene, but I was surprised that Mima, the kind of Fae queen, who's so dope and being her for Halloween next year.
Mima Rusin. That's
my catchphrase. It's just like, conduct yourselves accordingly. Like, this is a holy place. Conduct yourselves accordingly. I thought she was going to be like, fuck out of here.
No, but it says a lot with the history of the war with the Pact that she's so willing to accept some foreigners' help when there's such a stigma against Burgishmen, mm-hmm. that the Pact are just cunts.
Yeah.
And everyone fucking hates them. And I do want to say this now while I'm just thinking this on the tip of my tongue. I didn't even put this together and I knew the show was coming this way. But in the first scene of the first episode, when we kept talking about the big ass dogs,
they were all just werewolves. I was going to bring that up too. That is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, and they're on leashes and shit. So they're just injecting themselves, turning werewolf, and then being on leashes. And then,
Yeah.
That, I was going to ask that question because I didn't go back to the one to make sure that was the same thing.
And then later in the episode, at the very end, we find out that the Pact also have these goddamn airships.
Yeah.
Like, they are such a force to be reckoned with in this world. They feel so advanced warfare technologically compared to what everybody else is dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why Mima Rusin was so willing to be like, okay, you guys can stay. Doesn't even fight it.
Right. Yeah. Totally.
So Vets, is she, like Kathleen was saying, she's a queen. Is that right? Or is she just the spiritual leader of the town? Like, I don't, I'm
no, I think that was, I think she was using that as a slang term, like, yes, queen.
Oh, well,
unless you weren't.
I was calling her the Fae Queen. Like, she is the leader. I was calling her like the de facto leader of it.
She is the same position. Do you remember episode two, last episode, the woman who comes to the police station to give Aisling the burial rights?
Yes.
She has the same level of, not like authority, but that's like her position. You know, she's basically the high priestess.
Right. Right.
And okay. I would say in that area, because it is the Mimisary, the village is built around the Mimisary, that she, you know, would take the lead.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So speaking of taking the lead, we have Minshaw again. Oh, yeah, I'm going to Winshaw.
Winshaw, yeah.
He tells Philo to get all the soldiers, search everywhere inside of the town, because he thinks that there could be Fae guerrillas who are fighting for the Pact that are hidden there. And Philo's like, dude, you're bugging. All these people here are refugees. Guy's not having it because he's clearly paranoid about the war and everything. So Philo turns around and basically tells Darius, just you take the buildings, I'll take the land. This guy's freaking out.
Yeah, so now we learn that there are Pact Fae. Did we know that before, prior? And are they enslaved, or are they Fae that give themselves up? They're like, yeah, I want to be part of the Pact, dude.
I mean, I guess this might be something you guys can't tell us, but I feel like they would have to be controlled or enslaved somehow, because why else would they join? Because the whole point of the Pact is that you're under us and we're going to destroy you to that species.
The only way I would hesitate to agree with that is because the Fae are technically a race, but they have kingdoms just like the humans do. So, I mean, we only get the story from the perspective of the Burg and people that are aligned with the Burg. So I would say my guess would be that there's actually Fae that work with them willingly.
But I want to also say, he says something when he's talking to Philo. He's like, this place, he's saying he does not like the place. He's saying it's filled with corners and shadows. And I thought that was a really cool way of saying the fact that this place is just hidden nooks and crannies everywhere. And that's why they need to explore everything and don't miss anything. And we know he comes across the library, which is in a nook and a cranny, or like a shadow or a corner. And I thought that was a cool way of painting. Both times I watched it, it like made my ears perfect.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine? They can have anything hidden. All you have to do is make it up in the air somewhere, like where only the Fae can fly to, and they could be hiding, just like the library pretty much is.
Yeah, that's ironically how Philo discovers the library, is because he sees the tracks in the snow and he sees they just disappear. So he looks right up, finds the nook, makes his way up there.
And guy's a great climber, man.
Yeah, he was not going to be deterred.
One last thing. He makes a point saying Fort Tarlington. He's like, we lost a lot of good men that day. I didn't know. I just wanted to say it just in case it comes back at some point as a rook. I would like to just say that I clocked that in my brain.
I appreciate you.
Thank you. But yes, our sexy meet cute is coming up.
So we're inside this little crevice that Philo found, and he starts walking through, and he eventually makes his way to the inner chamber with a torch. And what he sees there is just a random book on this pedestal in this small circular room. He goes up to it. He starts reading it. I don't think he gets too deep into it before out of nowhere, a fae drops down behind him and puts a knife to his throat. And of course, it's our girl Vignette.
Nothing like a hot girl with a knife to your throat, am I right?
It's like the second time in three episodes.
Yeah. Right? I really like her knife. Her little curved blade.
I like that too.
So this is their first meeting, and she's rightfully pissed that a stranger that just arrived in their city is going through into their sacred library. This is, we find out later, she is the sworn protector of this library, and she's not supposed to let any of the knowledge get into the hands of the wrong people. So of course she's just pissed at this guy, and she just starts threatening him, saying, I'm going to kill you, blah, blah, blah. But what is it that turns her? Because she eventually does say, he promises.
Well, he says, you can either kill me or...
He's saying, if you kill me, they're going to find this place looking for me, and you'll see the blood, or you can just learn to trust me.
Yeah, they're going
to
come looking for the missing person and find this place, or you can trust me. Good.
She comes in hot. She's like, there are books in this room that are older than the first words your oafish species ever uttered.
I love that line.
Lit. Mm-hmm. So lit.
But she's aggressive. Hot, this is the part where I took note in the episode where Vignette looked extra beautiful compared to what she was in the first two episodes. And me and Jimmy were talking about before, I don't know if it's the hair and she just looks lighter hair or something. I don't know, but she looks fantastic throughout this whole episode. Mm-hmm.
They both do. I mean, he is so calm and hot and smooth in this scene, and he's not even flinching with this knife and this girl he's never met before, like different species. He's okay. He's like, we're going to get through
species?
This. Species? Yeah, I know.
their kind of interaction further kind of sells that point we were talking about with the Mima earlier, that technically there's like an agreement between the Fae and the Berg, but they don't really like each other. Mm-hmm. You know, because she's like, she immediately thinks the worst of him. You're going to take the books. You're going to take them back to the Berg and put them in some fucking museum for these assholes. We don't like, she clearly is like, Bergish men are not to be trusted.
And Mima Rusin completely agrees. She tells Vignette, you're going to watch this guy and make sure he keeps his word and doesn't tell his commanding officers anything about what he saw there. And that's when we get a montage of, it seems like days are passing of Vignette just casually being around wherever Philo is. He's just doing random things throughout his day. She's always in the corner watching as she was instructed to. Mm-hmm. But this is where you could tell she's starting to not only be fulfilling her mission, she's getting interested in him. She's picking up on his habits, and she's just studying what she thinks is a Bergish man. Mm-hmm. So
he's hot, man. He's just fucking reading with his fucking breakfast. Like, look at this smart, you know, interesting, intelligent man.
He's not on his cell phone or anything. No. Scrolling through Twitter.
Yeah,
he's reading a book.
He keeps his word, and he doesn't tell Darius about the library. And then they get word that something got fucked up in the defense. That line is down, and they have to go fix it. And Philo suggests that a fae could do it, and that he knows one that would. So they take V to string it. Ends up all good. I really thought something bad was going to happen when she was flying across with the rope or whatever.
They were worried it was a trap. Well, I guess technically it is. With the werewolves, correct?
They have the music playing when she's flying over the thing, too.
Shots at her or something. Like,
I'm just imagining her being hooked up to a harness zip lining for that shot. Because you know that's how they shot it.
Yeah.
For sure.
I think my biggest complaint about this episode might be how willing she was to accept to go on this mission for them. Because I just said it. You could tell she's starting to get interested. But that feels like a jump to where she's just willing to do a full mission for them, especially because she seemed like a more aggressive fae compared to other, you know, people in the city. So I don't know. That was a little weird that it didn't feel like it developed enough where she was just going to help the soldier's mission so quickly.
I feel like it would have been a great scene if they showed him convincing her to do it.
Yeah.
To show like her.
Just a quick conversation.
Yeah. And just make it be him that makes her say yes.
Mm-hmm. I thought he was going to be like, I didn't say anything about your library. You kind of owe me this type of thing.
I think that's.
That dialogue would have been enough.
I think
me.
That's what you have to assume because no conversation was shown.
Yeah.
But it would have been nice to see it.
Yeah.
But I die over the fact that they are now bonding over a fucking romance novel. Oh my God.
This is the real start of the romance.
It's amazing. It's a scientific romance. Yeah. Like, and oh my God, is he the love of my life?
This book we go to find out is called, the title of the episode, Kingdoms of the Moon.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to really retell the story of it, but it's just about different races, and then there's love involved, and it's kind of metaphor, symbolism, I don't know what I'm going for, of what is happening in the show between these two.
A rogue inventor journeys to the moon and falls in love with a princess of a lunar tribe. And then they talk about it for a bit, and he convinces her to take the book kind of by throwing it at her because she's like, fuck off. But she finally tells him that her name is Vignette.
Mm-hmm. And this is the book. Sorry, this is the book that Vignette has in the first scene.
Yep. With her,
when she's on the picture. When she's on the boat with the Filer's picture. Yeah.
I really love how they took the time to explain how he gets to the moon in the book. How he makes like a big steel capsule and like puts himself in a cannon and shoots himself out of the stratosphere. And that's exactly how someone in like the Industrial Revolution would think about space travel.
Yep.
Because they have no concept of fucking jet fuel and shit. It's just like really funny. I like that. Also, great romance scene because it opens up with our boys, Philo and Darius, checking each other out through their sniper scopes.
Yeah.
And he's like kind of gives them a thumbs up and waves. I'm like, look at them checking each other out.
Yeah.
So then, correct me if I'm wrong, they're looking through those scopes and we see the other people looking through scopes at them as well. The three dudes that end up being naked.
The pack
boyos.
Yeah.
They start checking our boys out and then they start getting naked.
Yeah. And they're shooting themselves up with that good. They're getting well in that werewolf serum. Well. And my note is, show us your penises, you cowards.
They must be wrapping those dicks up because Darius too, when he bends down, you would see his schlong or balls.
Big time.
Would.
The way when they you get a frontal shot of Darius naked, but it's shadow. I'm so sad.
Yeah, I definitely will admit that I was spamming the brighten button on my laptop.
Let me just say they definitely used some butt doubles because they had a nice muscular back and ass, and then all of a sudden they turned forward, and I'm expecting these guys to be buff, and they're just like some normal dudes. I'm like, you're using a body double.
That's so embarrassing. Like, buddy, your back's not built enough. Like, you slide out for this part and then slide back in for this part.
Yep.
They literally have zero lines and turn into wolves immediately, and yet they needed a body double.
Yeah, right.
So just hire the body double.
Exactly.
Let's quickly talk about the body doubles of on the wolf's curse now that we can
X, Y, and Z.
Now we know a little bit about it. So this, I guess that must have been the first time they've ever turned into a werewolf, right? Because I guess the way you can turn into a werewolf is if you inject yourself and force yourself into it, or if you're bitten by someone that's already a werewolf.
On a full moon,
and then the full moon will turn you.
And then the full moon turns you. So these guys, that was the first time they became a werewolf ever, or else you don't.
How do you? Yeah, because does it run out and you turn back, or do you just not? You inject yourself and now you're a werewolf forever until you die.
I think you turn back.
You would have to be because.
But
you see
what makes
turn
you turn back? Like, you know, like a regular werewolf, you just let it leave your body.
It's probably,
I guess
if it's moon induced, it's going to be as soon as the moon goes away. But if it's the first time you're injecting yourself, there's probably just a little.
Think about it as a drug. I mean, you shoot up heroin like and then you come down and you just shoot it up again.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. All right. So
that means they could have been werewolves before, right?
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Forcing yourself to be it again. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I mean, they show like a second of hesitation. They like look at each other and then do it, whatever. These guys are weirdos either way. So we flip to Vignette now reading. She's flipping through the pages. And then we hear wolf howls. We hear men screaming. We get gunshots. So Philo runs to the other side of the ravine where Darius and the squad were. Finds, you know, a bleeding horse. We got a couple dead bodies. And he peeks down. It's a ravine, I guess. You know, it's a cliff, whatever.
Yeah.
And sees someone getting eaten by one of these werewolves. So that thing turns around, and the CGI I thought was great when it's like wall jumping off both the things coming up and he's missing the shots. Finally, at the last second, naturally, kills it, and then he gets taken by another one. So he is kind of leaning off the cliff, fighting it off with his gun, and who else saves him but Vignette?
Yeah.
She puts like I don't even know, right through the eye.
Yeah, it was needle.
Oh, that's good. I like that. And then they kind of have a moment together. They look into each other's eyes for a little. But Darius emerges from the same crack that Philo just killed the first one from, covered in blood, but like a badass, goes, "It's not mine."
Yeah, but
I ran one down and killed it.
Did you? You knew right away?
I assume that's what they always say. Like Walking Dead, man.
Yeah,
they get bitten, they hide that shit. Yeah. I've seen enough Walking Dead to know that guy got bit.
That's true. I didn't clock it the first time. I was just like, cool.
Yeah, because they go right into the village after, and they're talking with Winshaw, and they're telling him about the werewolves, and he says, did anyone else get bit? Of course, Darius steps up and said, not anyone that's alive.
Right.
Obviously being an asshole lying about it.
Yeah.
But this is where we find out it's called the Wolf's Curse, which I like better than just werewolf.
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah.
But
we do watch the wolf turn back into a man as he's dying. So they're just like, Jesus, because that visual makes them go, oh, shit, because they're like, there's no moon. The fuck?
Yeah. So
and they brought the needles back, the syringes back with their clothes.
Yeah. Would you admit you got bitten?
No.
No.
I would admit, dude.
What about in a zombie apocalypse? You wouldn't admit it?
Nah, I wouldn't admit. I'd start killing as many people as I can before I turn.
Fuck you, bro.
Before you turn? Why? That's so absurd.
Start killing people, dude.
You know what I think often in The Walking Dead,
you die, die,
for God. 1 second, is that, to get off topic, but when they'd be like walking through the woods and see zombies that hung themselves, people in an apocalypse thinking, let me kill myself, but they didn't realize it was in the air. So since they didn't put like a bullet through their head, they're just alive, they're hanging there, forever as a zombie. Yeah. That's fucking torture.
That's bad.
Or they're bit and then they hang themselves to die. And
either
now they're
way.
Hanging. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah,
you know
that's
what?
A good point.
Yeah. To keep on this tangent, you know what I think about a lot when I think about the zombie stuff is World War Z, when Brad Pitt, they're in like Jerusalem and the chick he's with gets bit and he just immediately muscle memory reaction just cuts her arm right off.
Yeah.
I would never react that fast.
Yeah.
Like, well, I talk about this a lot when I'm drunk sometimes and I ask people that question, could you have done it? And everyone, you know, some people are like, oh yeah, I could have done it. There's no fucking way.
Could you have your arm chopped off or could you be the one to chop the arm off? What's the question?
Could you be the one to chop it off?
I could chop it off, but I couldn't be the, I don't know. Like I would just like close my eyes and chop, but like to get my own arm chopped off, I would be like, holy shit.
Well, he does it so quick that she doesn't.
Oh, no, not that quick. Yeah. By the way, Kathleen, World War Z, guess who the wife is?
I can't guess. There's
Our
so many women.
Favorite girl from The Killing.
Mireille?
Yeah.
I love her. Mm-hmm. Fabulous.
Yep. I don't even know if she's done anything else since then. I got her that nice movie and then.
Wait.
Then
she was
the main girl. The main girl.
The redhead.
Yeah.
She had a ABC show, Shondaland ABC show to herself. It was awesome. It got two seasons and they canceled.
I did not know that.
God.
They like canceling shows you like.
And it's like when you watch every show in the world, one's bound to get canceled every once in a while.
That makes sense. All right. Anyway. So back to this show. So we have Philo eating lunch on the edge of, I guess it's a cliff. I feel like cliff, ravine. I don't know which one to use. And Vignette pops up and says, hey, I finished the book.
Philo eating off a knife is hot for me.
It was a fish, right? I thought you just had like a fish and he was taking pieces of it with
a knife.
Yeah,
like butter. I don't even know. But yeah, they have this sweet ass conversation about this book. She loves it. The book is obviously drawing parallels, what we were talking about, their lives and what they're living. And but I love when British people say, gods, I was sobbing. Gods.
Yeah,
she was just so passionate about the book that you knew that she was just so into Philo after reading that and just identifying with so much.
Yeah,
he's a sensitive guy.
Oh, it's interesting, too, that she doesn't like it or she's bored by it in the beginning when it's just the whole story of he goes to the moon and falls in love. But then when it turns into the kid is born and tries to find the father, that's when she's all in.
Yeah. And Philo's sitting there listening like, holy shit, I identify with happiness.
I know that game.
Yeah. I mean, the line of the scene is, he goes, I'm so pleased that you like it. That you liked it. And she goes, I loved it. And he's like, ooh.
I love you.
She loved it. Also, super nice guy. He's like, take it.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, you'll never have your copy. I can get a million back at the Berg, baby girl.
Yeah, baby girl.
This is like a conversation I have with many people. That joy that he's feeling, that his favorite thing she also loved. I'm like, this is me. This is the only thing I care about is watching TV shows and telling people about them and hoping that
that's
they love
a good
it.
Parallel.
That's my television.
It's why we have a TV podcast. Christ.
That is why.
So after this talk, Vignette decides to bring Philo back to the Sacred Library. And it's called and what she tells him is it's the largest library in the Kingdom of Anown. That's pretty badass in itself. But they go back to the center room where they met in the first place. And Philo does the whole ignorant, oh, is there another room? Like, where are all the books? And she says, you think like a human or a Bergishman. And she just starts flying straight up in the air. And you just see the layers and layers and layers of all these books. And it just kind of puts it into an epic proportion of why it's such a sacred library to the Fae people.
Mm-hmm. She calls him a Fantroy. What does that mean? She goes, Fantroy, you only think in two dimensions.
They bring that up twice. And I still, like, that's another thing about the world building that they're missing on. I don't know what that even means.
I liked it anyway. It's like, it seemed like a dig at him, being like, almost like, you simpleton, you only think in two dimensions.
Yeah, it just seems like a fairish word for a human being.
It's like leggers with
but probably like in their ancient or high language.
Yeah. So what Vignette goes to show Philo is she wants to re-show him the book that he saw in the earlier scene, written about the first time Philo's species, being the Bergishmen, the humans, have stepped foot in Tirnanoc. Is that correct? And that was roughly 700 years ago. This is where they start talking about the similarities between the Kingdoms of the Moon book that Philo gave her end this book that was written by the Fey people back in the day. And this is just kind of a cool, passionate speech. They just go back and forth talking about it, how Vignette's obsessed with the idea that that information could have gotten around to one part of the world and it comes back and meets it where it's in its origin and down the line in the future. What did you think about that speech?
I thought it was awesome. I mean, that's the thing where, you know, you were saying in the beginning of this episode how this adds so many layers to Vignette. And in the first two episodes, you just get that typical hard-headed, put a knife to your throat because you left me, girl. You know, I'll do anything. I'll go get the flag. You don't really see too much of her except for that one layer. And now it's adding the layers with the book first. Obviously, she's a scholar or at least appreciates literature because she's the keeper of the library. So, I mean, and her whole speech, I just thought it was a great layer to her character.
Yeah, I mean, they're basically just saying the book he loves is paralleling to this book that she knows and that they're crossing and they're basically the same. They're written by different people, but it's the same story. It's dope.
All right, so I'm going to check in here with my Wikipedia and YouTube searches. So the story that she tells is basically a man washes ashore, falls in love with the queen. There's some nice pictures in the book of them banging. He leaves, but leaves the queen with a child who's a half-blood. Tir na n'og is the name of the continent in the show. Tir na n'og, I could be pronouncing that wrong, is from Irish mythology. It's basically what's known as like the Celtic or the Celtic otherworld. So the story of Tir na n'og is that there is a woman from that world who came to Ireland. She met a man. They fall in love. They go back to Tir na n'og. They stay there for 3 years. He gets homesick, leaves, but he doesn't realize that it was 3 years in Tir na n'og, but it was 300 years in Ireland. When he touches foot back on the ground, all those years catch up to him and he dies. It's just interesting that what she says is that he left and no one knows what happens to him or what happened to him. So basically it's the same exact story.
Yeah, it's strong foreshadowing too, because when she tells the story, he jumps in when they say the part where he left her with a child. He says half-blood. He's the one who says it himself. Mm-hmm. Interrupts her and says it.
And your flag was already going off at this point. You kind of were getting that. Kathleen, were you picking up on him talking about like being a half-blood and stuff?
I truly didn't pick it up until it was spoon-fed.
So, let me tell you guys a funny story. So, and this is a funny story. No, it's not that good actually. But I last episode, podcast episode, I was thinking while we were talking, what if he's like Faye? And then but in my own head, I was like, oh, Jim, you're a freaking dumbass. We've seen him without a shirt on like three times. So he's whatever. And then when they said half blood, I was like, why are they saying that like that? And then, you know, as it's happening, I caught it with the scars.
Well, neither of you really caught on to the conversation at the end of episode two after Vignette stole the flag. And she was saying, do the other people know? I'm going to tell your secret.
Yeah. See, I just assumed the secret was that you're banging a Fae.
Then I said, I think it's something deeper than that.
Yeah.
So, but.
And I also thought, and sorry to interrupt you, Kelly, I also thought that it could have been something with the Darius thing, like maybe he was guilty of whatever it was too, and he could have also been in jail, whatever.
I'm happy that neither of you guys predicted that he was going to be part Fae, because they do show earlier in the season, and I think it was episode one, when Portia, after he bangs Portia for the first time, she's like touching his back and saying, like, what are these scars?
Yep.
And he just blows it off as war wounds or something like that.
He says a long time ago for dark times. Yeah. You know,
I was looking right at you guys as we were talking about that part to see if like any of you guys had any thought.
No, I'll tell you, not even for a second that I think they're wings or anything. Yeah.
I'm not the best at guessing things. I love to be analytical, but I also just like love being surprised. So I'm not truly trying to, I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
I do love calling things too, though.
That adds a cool dimension to Philo too, because now we don't know how old he is either. I mean, he could be around for way longer than we thought too, right?
True. Because he's Fae. The fairies age differently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because when he asks her, how old are you? She says, that's telling, you know, and we already know that the singer was 90 and she looked young. Mm-hmm. So our boy Philo could be a hot ass 200-year-old Fae or something. Hmm.
Mima Rusin and Winshaw find out the bad news that a Fae settlement a little bit north of their location fell to the pact terribly. And Mima offers to help instantly. What does she say she's going to do?
She says they're not going to be able to get the blood there. And then she kind of donates the wings of the Fae, being like, we could help
to bring
get
medical
relief.
Supplies, basically.
And the blood that they need.
Right, because they're saying we're way too far away to help.
This is, if you were going to guess it ever, this is the moment you guess that he's half Fae, because he is literally creeping. Philo's creeping around the corner, hearing them talk. We need blood. Everybody available needs to give blood. And he's like, yeet, not my blood. I'm half bay. Exactly.
I definitely caught it when he was talking to the guy without a leg. And I mean, I guess that's when you're supposed to start catching it. Mm-hmm.
Still over my head. Second watch, I was like, that's a clue. That's a clue. That's a clue.
So like you're saying, as soon as Philo heard that the call for blood was happening, he goes away back to the library. And then this is when we get the nice make out fairy sex
woohoo
scene. Doing which it. I know
this
Paul
is
would have loved.
Hot scene. I never even understood the advantage that Wings could give you. I need a pair ASAP.
And Wings also, there's something erotic about him. He's feeling her wings up while they're banging.
That scene also made me laugh because the wings were obviously not there when they were recording. So his hand is just kind of flat and you can tell he was just waving his hands in the air and they tried to fit the wings within his hand while like the CGI of it all. Well, still hot.
What I got from that was that's a little bit of foreshadowing to when he's talking to her after he says that he's a half-blood. That he can feel his wings sometimes, just like the shadow limbs. So I thought he was really just saying, like, this is what I should have on my back and appreciating the wings that he no longer has.
See, I was thinking of it like, wow, do you think there's like nerve endings in those wings?
That's what
like,
that's what I was doing. I thought he was playing a little fiddle over.
But we also get when she's super into it. I don't even know if it's specifically when she orgasms or if it's just feeling really good. They shine, really blue. And
she didn't use Tourmaline's move.
I was
going to
say,
I was waiting for it.
Tourmaline fakes it.
Say it's a tell for her that she didn't get off.
That's so funny. He's like, you didn't light up this time. She's like, sometimes it just doesn't happen.
Yeah. In there, sister. Anyway.
So this is when I think we get our biggest time jump of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because that scene ends with them just, you know, pillow talking a little bit.
Ooh, can I add one little thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
So they're cuddling, talking about the beads in her hair, what they represent.
That's what I was going to get at.
Okay.
After they bang the first time, it skips to them in a bed talking again. And this is when they have that conversation.
Sorry, yeah.
So what you can insinuate is a lot of time has been going on. They've been banging for a while. And we can also piece together some of the clues that I took from Darius's wolf transformation later that months have been going by. This is like a typical World War II state of like a soldier going over there and finding a love. So it's not obvious. And this is, again, always some of the complaint is the subtle world building. But Kathleen, I think that's what wasn't explicit. But I think you just have to assume is that this is months in the future of they're pretty much already together and all that. But this is also the scene where they have another conversation before the spoon feed of the half-blood about his scars, right? Mm-hmm. Or is this it? This is exactly it, right?
This is exactly it. And so they're talking about the beads in her hair, what they represent. I just want to bring it up because the last one's like, this is what you give away when you fall in love.
When
you give your heart away, whatever. And then they moved on to the scars.
That's the necklace he had in the second episode.
Yep, that's what I was
Do you remember
ask.
That?
Yeah, because at the end of this episode, she gives it to him before they separate.
He was looking at it,
time.
Yeah, right.
Love.
Don't we all? I was going
to
say, don't we all?
It took her a while to give her that, to give him that bead, man. I know that's a special bead, but
they were still together.
That was an appropriate amount of time, a couple months.
She gave her flower to him earlier than her heartbeat.
How do you know she was a virgin?
Jimmy gave Steph a promise ring on the first date.
Yeah.
Oh, Jimmy's currently rocking a chastity belt.
Yeah.
Saving himself for marriage.
They do talk about the scars, though.
Yeah. He gives her the same story that he gives Portia earlier. Well, a little bit. Well, he doesn't say a war wound. He just says, I don't remember.
Yeah.
He dodges the question again, basically. And then she goes, well, I got a scar or whatever. And he's like, where? And she goes, well, you got to find it.
Yeah.
That's a hot move.
Yeah, you're right. And that takes us to the next day because we're going to get to that mic drop.
Moment. Yeah. This takes us to a super relevant scene. This is when he has the chat with the fairy who has the one leg. And the guy says to him, you know, it might sound crazy, but sometimes I feel like it's still there. And he says it doesn't sound crazy at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we get Winshaw, you know, being low key, passive aggressive, racist. You know, so what do you think about these fae? He's like, you know, whatever. They're not bad. They have a long history. They've been around so much longer than we have. And he's like, well, why don't you think that they have a good industry and like an economy and stuff? And he just says that perhaps they've pursued different ends to ours. And then he gives. Yeah. Philo's just a fucking man. And then the guy's like, Kigeshi almost gives the longer Bane speech. Yeah, they're all about like adultery, fornication, all that crazy shit. That's what they're after. Basically, Winshaw knows that he's fucking Vignette, and he's just giving him like a very passive aggressive warning about it. We shouldn't get too deep into their culture and get tricked by it.
He's like, oh, I'm pretty freaking deep, man.
Both sides are kind of doing that too. We've got Vignette's people being like, what's going to happen after? You sure? Like, tread carefully. Tourmaline. And then his guys are
that's about to happen too, more with Tourmaline.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. Yeah. The Tourmaline entrance? Our girl.
Hold on. Where am I
there? There's a couple bomb shells of Tourmaline that I want to talk about.
I like Tourmaline.
No. So yeah, okay. I called out the sexual tension last time.
Dude, I didn't even remember that. And that was such a good call.
So we you. Call. All right. Well, you know,
if I'm going to call anything, it's sexual attention. Yeah. I can't wait until all the siblings in the show also bang and I can shove that.
Oh, my God. Imogen all is right. Not banging her brother, dude.
Imogen and Ezra for life.
Before we get into Tourmaline, we got to talk about our boy Darius.
Yeah.
So Darius slips out of the Mimisary, and Philo follows him because he sees it happen. We watch Darius strip down. You know, we pulled out our looking glass for his penis, didn't get it. But we do watch him turn this time. Mm-hmm. And Philo watches on in horror as
in front of a full moon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as he gallops away as the new, technically they're called Mareks, but I like werewolf better.
Ooh, yeah, really? I didn't pick that up.
I didn't catch that either.
Well, that's like, you know, classic.
Marek.
Because they don't fucking tell you that.
Yeah, right. So it's another tell that he's done this before, because he gets there, you know, he stops at the tree, looks up, he says, all right, now you can take me, or whatever he says. So he knows what's coming.
Yeah, good call. Yeah. I don't know why I was wondering so hard whether he had been it before. Because I think you're right. It really is an issue of not knowing what this timeline has been this episode.
That's why you got the vets here for us to fill in the gaps.
But I will say that I definitely went into this podcast episode thinking that that was the first time that he turned.
Don't admit that on the podcast.
So, come on, we're transparent, we're honest.
Yeah, so he finds him on the shore the next morning. Yeah. And I was assuming it was his first time as well, Kai, and I'm like, can you imagine the scaries of waking up just on blood and being like, oh shit,
next to a dead deer
right in the eyes when you wake up.
I had some rough mornings at Penn State, but nothing like this.
Yeah, right.
I don't know, I might have been pretty close. But this is another show example of how accepting Philo is. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's just throwing the clothes at him, being like, bro.
Yeah.
This look good. He's like, it's not what it looks like. How could it be anything other than exactly what it looks like?
This is where we get the two boys airing out all of their issues that they've both gotten since coming to the war. We have, you know, Darius is worried about what's going to happen when he goes back to the Berg. He knows that if they find out I'm a Critch who can make other people Critch, they're going to hate me as much as possible. They don't care that I'm just normal and have this under control. And then, of course, he's calling out Philo for having his own issues, saying that he's in love with one of the Fae and he knows he's going to have to leave her one day.
Right.
So they're just kind of, you know, they're both very aware. It seems that they're as close as you can be and they're just soldier brothers. And that just explains more at the relationship they have back in episode 2 and what it's like now in Carnival Row. They ride for each other. And I fucking love these two.
Visits him every day.
Every single day.
Yeah.
And Philo says, you know, in this scene, he says, I'll take care of it. And he's kind of fucking taking care of it. Yeah. But the great quote of this scene is, you know, I'll be shitting bones and leather for a week. Mm-hmm. But in the moment when the wolf comes out, it's freedom. Mm-hmm. It's like the wolf was what you were all along underneath it all. And the bite was just permission to stop pretending.
Such a good line.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, damn, that was fucking deep as fuck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Saying that that Tirnanoc and this, I can't even say the word ministry.
Mimisary.
The Minister of Magic. This whole place is just so good and freeing compared to what the Burgess lifestyle is. And Philo feels that. And you can tell he feels that by just how that he reacts to Vignette and just the whole society.
The Amazon fact here, it says that the wolf's curse is an atavistic. An atavistic means something that turns something else back to its ancient or ancestral form. I mean, that's basically literally what he says. I just like that that was like a little fact on this scene.
That's cool.
Where do you see those?
So if you have the screen expanded, do you hit full screen to full screen it?
Yeah.
I just watch it on a TV.
Top left corner says X-ray and you can drop it down. And it has all the characters that are in the scene. Mm-hmm. Facts.
Mm-hmm. Amazon's cool like that. I like that they do that.
It's also big for this show.
Roommates.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And they were roommates.
And lovers.
And love us.
Let's get her in here, because as soon as the boys are done having their
guest
star, Tourmaline.
Let's get her on the pod right here.
So when I would be so salty that I'm in South Carolina right now.
Yeah, right.
We can
mid-pandemic,
get her.
Yeah, we can get coronavirus. She's
hit
here.
Us up, Tourmaline.
So when the boys are done with their conversation, we hear the Fae blow the horn. They look at each other. They run back to the center of the city and they find out what's going on. What happened is there are a bunch of Fae refugees from a nearby city that just got invaded by the Pact. And this is all that's left of them. And of course, we find out that Tourmaline from episodes 1 and 2's the whore in Carnival Row is here. This is her reunion with Vignette since, I guess, college.
I loved this. She doesn't even look like herself without the blue hair.
Better with the blue hair.
I don't know that I would have picked her out of a lineup and said that's Tourmaline without the blue hair. It's not that I wasn't looking at her face in the last 2 because she's a hot girl and I was definitely looking at her face. I don't know what it is.
When you first see her, she's all covered up. She has the hood over her and everything.
Yeah.
Then they start catching up in Vignette's room. Mm-hmm. She's like in the bath. They're having their conversation. And this is where my whole comment is, ooh, Kathleen was right about the past sexual tension.
Yeah. Ooh, V's just taking care of her. I mean, she says like she met someone and they're talking, and because Tourmaline's kind of saying, I knew I had to get home to you. Like, I'm so regretful of how things ended with us. And she said, it never ended. It just changed. You're still my closest friend. And she's taking care of her. And it's really a sweet scene. Like, it really is. And then it's the classic best friend, maybe a little jealousy, but best friend being concerned because she said she met someone. She said he's a Burgish soldier, telling her about Philo. And she's like, okay, well, what happens when the war ends, you dummy? Like, he's literally just gonna bounce and marry some fat chick and have fat kids.
Yeah, she was pissed about that.
Yeah,
she's a little jealous and a little concerned. That's a mix of both of them, right?
Yeah, there. That was whack. But the funny thing, a little cheeky line she says is that it's the oldest story there is.
Mm-hmm. Tale's oldest time,
and we know it is.
And we know it is because they have the 700-year-old manuscript. It's Philo's book. It's the story of this show. You know, so I like that little cheeky line.
Yeah,
they threw in.
A good line.
I love calling things cheeky. It's good.
She kind of convinces Vignette a little bit. Vignette at first is like, you know, you're wrong about him. And then her face kind of changes and she's like, damn, maybe she's not wrong.
That changes her whole demeanor. That's the rest of her personality change until the Pact attacks.
Can I tell you, being a girl, I have been swayed by my girlfriends where I'm like, no, it's fine. And then someone will be like, well, that was kind of really fucking annoying of him. And I'd be like, you know what? You're fucking right. Yeah. And then it changes your mood. It's bad. Girls have that effect on each other.
I'm going to get a knife and bring it over to
just, like,
Philo.
Hype each other up to be like, he's a piece of shit. And I'm like, you're right.
She's getting out of the honeymoon phase and she's starting to look at it realistically and holistically, looking at the future and seeing what they're, and Tourmaline just kind of enabled her. And that takes us right to the next time Philo and Vignette are banging. This is what we talked about earlier. The wings are just not doing the thing.
those are sad wings.
Yeah. He know. Philo was like, what the hell's going on here? And she's like, eh.
I don't see any colors. Yeah. Like, come on, bro.
But I love that he was wondering. He obviously wants her to have a good time, too. He's like, I want to make sure you're doing it as well.
Orlando Bloom is not used to chicks not having a good time.
Yeah, it's an ego hit for him, but he's also like, I think he genuinely cares as well. So.
And he does, because he asked her what's going on and she regurgitates the entire conversation with Tourmaline saying, what the hell's going to happen? What's our future looking like? And he's saying, I haven't really thought about it. And she goes and drops that line. What am I, just this? Is this where she says the feck or the foreign? I'm just a
the exotic fuck.
The exotic fuck. Yeah.
Let me ask you guys a question. Is this just a funny line or is this foreshadowing? Because she says sometimes it doesn't happen. It usually only happens when you're with a fae, another fae.
Is that what she says?
Yeah. She said usually only other fae's can make you do that. And if with him being like half.
Oh.
I mean, yeah, it's foreshadowing for,
but it's also
15 seconds from now.
But I mean, it's also just funny because that's just like what all girls have to say. But like, I was just wondering.
No, I mean, that's directly what this is. Yeah. Because what he ends up saying, telling her, is that he thinks of her way more than an exotic fuck. He says, you're like coming home. And that completely throws her off. She is just so into
what
the idea.
Let's go.
And that leads right into our mic drop moment that Philo is half fae and Vignette is fucking hooked. Everything about him, he could do no wrong at this point.
Yep.
Until he does, you know.
It's cool. It's like the phantom limb syndrome that a lot of people have. I mean, he's talking about the soldier who lost the leg, and the soldier was telling him, I can still feel it. You must think I'm crazy. And he's like, I don't think you're crazy. Actually, that makes total sense. So we're supposed to believe that Philo has known his whole life that he's half fae.
Yeah, because he says it was when he's a baby.
The headmaster knows. Mm-hmm. And he just had to keep it a secret. Oh, that is
so he never knew his parents. He grew up in this home with a headmaster that was very aware of his situation. But the headmaster never told anybody that he was half-fae because that would have fucked his whole life up. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to bring this up real quick. This is a flashback to the Unseelie Jack incident where that guy concussed him, basically. Remember, he threw the wrench at his head and then Unseelie...
I was just going to say.
So they're in the room... After he throws the wrench at his head, he's basically fucked up and he's talking to Portia and she's like, you got to go to a doctor. You could be like, you know, concussed. And he says, I don't do doctors. Yeah, that no is doctors. Directly because of this. He doesn't want a doctor examining his back, his body, his blood, any of that. Because
he literally, know he's a fae. Yeah, he literally says no doctors at all. I've never been to the doctor because they can't figure out I have any fae blood. But I was actually going to ask. He gets hit in the head with this hammer, right? Mm-hmm. And we were joking how he just kind of like shrugs it. Our fae are supposed to be like stronger, right?
No,
like,
they have hollow bones. I don't know if he does because he's a half-blood, but it should be worse.
Yeah. I was going to say like maybe he could just take a better hit because he's half mystical, but whatever.
Yeah, he's got bitch bones. Yeah. Wait, Unseelie Jack's not his name. What's his name?
I think it's Seamless Joe or something. Yeah, I was gonna say that, but I didn't know if you kept it that in the last amazing. Step.
Yeah, but they have a really sweet conversation about what it means for him to be half blood. He basically says half bloods don't belong anywhere. You wouldn't really get it until you've been to the Burg. But people don't like half bloods because they remind them of Fae, and Fae don't like half bloods because they remind them of the boot that's on their neck. Mm-hmm. You know, and she kind of says to him, "Well, maybe you know your parents did it because they thought you could live a better life that way," which is a nice way to look at it. But he's kind of thinking, you know, what were my parents like? Was it a one night stand? Were they in love? All these things that, all these questions that you would have. Oh, and she just doesn't really have the answers for him.
It's really good. But she is full in, like you said, Luke. She is like, okay, that's all he needed to say for her to be like.
And this just changes your complete outlook on Philo when he's in Carnival Row itself. Because now you know, was he just this nice inspector that was helping everybody out? But no, it's more that he is just a person of the world that he's a mix of Critch, he's a mix of human, and he just cares about everybody because he should. He's just a genuine person.
See, that's interesting because it's like an argument where in episodes 1 and 2, being unaware that he's half fae, I thought he was just really woke as a human, just a woke human being like, come on, guys, what's up, dude? They're people, we're people.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now you know he has some stock in Fae, and you're like, okay. I mean, he's still an amazing dude, but it does take away some of his genuine stock. but it makes me love him even more, but it does take away some of his like, wow, what a woke ass bro.
Mm-hmm.
But let me just we have two more big scenes here, but just a quick poll to the two rooks. How did this, I've been saying specifically that this is the whole Carnival Row season show is built on the backbone of their relationship. Are you guys like full in, you love everything about this, how it's developed, and does it explain how they both were reacting to nearly everything in the first two episodes, from Portia to when she got back to the Burg?
It's excellent.
Makes the first two episodes better in hindsight, right?
100%. Yeah. But the only question I have is, after you look at this whole third episode, I still don't know if I am down with her doing the whole, I am so pissed you're alive that I'm going to go put a knife to your neck reaction. I feel like the reaction at the end of this episode where she's like, what's the deal? Asking him first should have been the first reaction.
Faye, that's not what I'm going to say. Love makes you do crazy things. And he actively, after they spent allegedly months together, who's to say the timeline, together, telling each other everything. Like she's the only person in the world besides the headmaster who knows he's Faye. And they said they were going to meet up and he lied. And like she thought she lost this thing and she says later, she's like, I wanted to die. Like you thought you were saving me, but then I wanted to die from like heartbreak and whatever it was.
Yeah.
It's a betrayal.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a bad betrayal.
I buy it, but at the same time, Vignette needs to watch some TV because she knows that he's just saving her.
She was
her
never going to kill him. Like, she was doing it as a fuck you. I'm aware that you fucked me over and that you're a piece of shit now. And she wasn't going to stab him.
I still don't think that you're a piece of shit is the 100% correct because he actually warns her before the decision is made that we can never work and where are we going to go and this and that. It's not like he's saying, oh, exactly what Tourmaline thought, like, oh, I'm just freaking done with you now. Let me just pretend to be dead and disappear.
Let me tell you something. As someone who thought she had a very good 2.5 year relationship with someone who cut me off completely, but still, like, we've had recent conversations where he's like, I'm doing this for you. Like, I don't want to, like, overstep. I don't want to do anything. Like, I told him to his face, I was literally like, you ignoring me for the last 6 months, or not ignoring me, but just being completely different than you were the first 2.5 years, has made me think the first 2.5 years were illegitimate. Like, yeah. It makes me think that none of that was legit if you can act like this for this 6 months.
And that's,
you know,
her
what
point.
I mean?
She's saying, what, those months didn't count? Nothing was
exactly
purposeful?
Exactly.
No,
so
I'm
like,
well, I'm just saying, like, a past relationship, if you break up with somebody, it's one thing. But if you're saying, I'm a human and you're a fae and we'll never be able to work and it's just, you're going to die or you're going to die following me and I pretend to die for a noble reason, I don't know if it's really that same kind of thing.
I also want to talk about this real quick. And Kyle, your opinion on this might be better because, you know, go have a little bit more information. But wasn't it genuine? I felt that it was genuine when he said he was going to go away with her before the imminent attack of the pack being right there. Like, he was going to do it.
Right. But he was saying that he had issues. And then she said, let's go here. We can do it. And he said, yes. But then here comes the boom, boom, boom. And then I think he had to make a move and he knew.
Right. So if the boom, boom, boom didn't come in, he would have left though, right?
But we're conversation one scene too early.
Oh, you haven't brought up Philo's pecs once this
episode. Bro, we've been tearing through scenes.
But fuck, marry, kill. Left pec, right pec.
How could you ever make me choose
Cars
between the two?
Cars. We didn't talk about Cars' boobs at all. You guys are really...
We don't do that. That's Paul. That's what...
Who's?
Kara. Oh,
I was like,
Kara?
Who the fuck's Kara?
Kara. Kara Daly.
She says it weird. I think she says Kara.
Kara.
Yeah.
Say it like that.
Right, see, Kathleen, that was, you were supposed to bring out the boobs. Then we could come in.
Yeah.
But Paul
honestly
just does.
How do we think about her tits?
Great. Fantastic.
Good.
Wrong?
It's a great shot. She's like arching her back, like her wings are on. I'm just like,
but she looked so hot this episode.
Chef's kiss. I mean, this is my argument, because as much as I love to see that as well, I'm like, give me the penises, you cowards.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean,
never gonna happen.
Right now, Darius' dick should have been in this.
It's just booty and stuff.
Where do you see a dick if it's not Game of Thrones or Spartacus? You don't.
I've seen dicks in things where I'm like, whoa,
they show little dick in Last Kingdom.
They show
like a small dick, but not a small dick, but a little bit of dick.
All right. Okay, so we have Tourmaline now is deciding to leave where they're at. She's going to Magmar. Magmar's Pokemon. I think it's Magmar. But before she leaves, she has to stop by Philo's bench that he usually eats at and has a conversation with him. So she basically tells him that Vignette is in love with you. And that love is going to get her killed, because I've been on the war front and the pact is steamrolling the bird. They're going to come here and it's going to come down to leaving you or staying with you and dying. And that's the way she is. She's going to stay with you and die by your side. Yeah, so if you love her, you won't give her the choice to.
I think my side is doing pretty good after that conversation.
Like, as in you're saying that she should have been okay with what he did?
Not okay, just not as enraged.
So she gives him basically the lay of the land. She obviously knows Vignette. That's her best friend. He definitely has a look like, fuck, she's kind of got a point. You know, like, that's obviously a scenario that could happen. And he knows her as well. And he agrees that that's exactly what she would do.
So am I wrong in saying that Tourmaline planted the initial seed for this whole thing to happen?
Oh, yeah.
Part of the blame, I get. I'm not saying that I agree with you, Jimmy, but I'm saying Vignette should not just be mad at Philo, because I am saying that, but she should also be a little mad at Tourmaline. Because Tourmaline...
She has no idea, though.
That's true.
Also assumed, and I could just be a rook and got this totally wrong, and you can correct me if I am wrong, but I assumed that it was Tourmaline who told her that he was dead. But when she said, you had somebody close to me tell me that I was dead, or you were dead.
No, it was Mima.
Yeah, but I'm saying in episode 2 when she's mad at him and she says, you faked your death and had someone close to me tell me that you were dead. and I believed it. Mm-hmm. I thought that was just going to be Tourmaline that did it.
Like you thought that after seeing that Tourmaline was in this flashback episode?
No. I at the time of episode
two. That's a crazy assumption.
It was close.
That's well, she only has one friend that we know of, so yeah, I just assumed that it was. I mean,
yeah.
Well.
That's I'm thinking that you were really thinking about it when I was not at all. Yeah.
I would like to have the line because I'm pretty sure the line was somebody line? Something like the closest person to me or something weird like that where I just
but I think Mima fits that category.
Yeah, she does.
Too.
She 100% does, but I just because I didn't know she existed yet, right. I just went Tourmaline.
There's no way you could possibly know that Mima was going
to
be the one.
Part of the blame goes to Tourmaline because she put the idea in Tyler's head.
Oh, yeah. He was never going to do this if they didn't have that conversation.
Yes, yes.
You know, he might have been like saying, hey, you got to get the fuck out of here. But like, he was never going to fake his death. There's no way. So the pact has taken the capital of the Kingdom of Anoon. And the Burgishmen are like, all right, we got to dip. Like, we're going back to the Burg. Sorry, guys. So Mima tells Vignette to go seal the library. Philo follows her, tries to convince her to meet him at the port that the army is going to set sail from back to the Burg. And she's like, what do you mean? Like, we're not going to split up. Just wait for me. I'm going to go seal the library, and then we're going to get the hell out of here. She actually wants to go to Ignota, where our boy Mr. Agrius is from.
Ooh,
so that would have been an interesting little they went fact. There. Yeah, I got you, boss. It's funny that we were talking about this. I say that he agrees, but in my notes, I do say he agrees, but he's lying.
I didn't think he was lying yet until the threat of the airships popped up and he had to make the split decision.
I kind of want to do this with the vets then. I want to backtrack a little bit because I thought the conversation started with him just saying, we are going separate ways. That's it. When you're saying he said, meet me wherever, you're saying that they were going to split up and then get back together. I just thought that meant they're just gone.
Before
separate.
They thought the capital was attacking, right before that, this conversation happens, the Burgishmen have a plan to start retreating back towards the coast, which is they're going to then take ships back to the Burg.
Right.
And he was telling her he had something to do. You deal with what you have to hear and then leave meet me here before I go home and then we'll figure it out.
Okay. She said, we're not going to split up and you might not live or I might not live. We may never get back together. Okay. Right. Because isn't there something in the middle of that, though, where he does say to her, like, okay, but this isn't going to work, or how can we get this to work or something? No?
Because she was saying that she would go back to the Burg with him, and he was saying that's off the table, basically.
Okay, so
you're going to get discriminated against, we're going to have a terrible life, blah, blah, blah.
Right, so he's giving his side where he says, I don't think it's going to work, but then she says, let's go to place Kyle said, hit me with that.
Ignota.
And then he started to be like, okay, well, maybe this can work. Okay. All right.
The only reason I think that's a little bit of, you know, the vet status working against me over reading his facial expressions when they hug, because he does have a look of worry on his face. And I think it might just be him. I mean, he's probably in that moment thinking, is this a good idea at all? But I don't know if he's exactly lying.
So when they meet in this scene, he knows that the attack has happened, but he doesn't know the attack on their actual location has happened.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know what I was thinking at the time, if he was lying or if he was just in for it.
It's impossible to tell because we don't get a resolution to it, but I like to think Philo was going to commit to leaving and going to a foreign country so they could live together.
Yeah, I like that better.
I do think that, yeah.
My first time watching it, I did not think that. But this on this rewatch, knowing what I know and then listening and looking for body language, and just it just to me felt like he was going to do it before the pack showed up.
Yeah, the speech about her feeling like home and that whole speech makes me think that he was in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she wraps this whole interaction up by giving him the braid that the lasses save until you give to the one who you give your heart to. And then she says, I love you. And he responds with, I love you. It's like, let's fucking go. This is a great scene. She gave him the fucking bead from her hair.
Kathleen's been quiet for like 5 minutes and it's lit.
Well, we've been trying to figure out like how this man feels about this woman.
Entered that conversation by going, oh, we'll do this with the vet. So I was like,
yeah,
okay.
Kathleen's like,
my
I'm gonna
brain
take a
wandered.
Nap.
I'm pretty drunk right now.
Still kind of a little bit in this scene, we get the packed airships are now over the horizon and they are on the way to fuck some shit up at this emissary.
And when we flash to what they look like on the inside, the Pact are such a goddamn good enemy as just a entity. Yeah. They have these Gatling guns. They're shooting grenades, I guess. Yeah. And it just seems that they outclassed the shit out of the Bürgersmann in terms of war technology and clearly out of Fey technology. The Gatling gun is the perfect weakness to them when they're just flying around the air. They just are fucking them up. And that's what we found out from, I think it was either Tourmaline or Mima Russa talking about what was going on in the north of where they were. But these guys are such a threat. They just start fucking shit up right away.
Yeah. I mean, you would think that Faye coming with those fire, you know, cocktails or whatever would be a problem, but they're just lighting them up. Not one got through.
Unfortunately, we watched some Faye die, and then we watch Winshaw die. Yeah. They drop a bomb right on his ass, and that kind of creates chaos inside of the walls. It also creates like that classic bombing movie thing where the sound kind of fades out. He's all disoriented. There's music in there,
we
like
get the
opera
angelic
music.
Voice that starts playing, which is awesome.
Exactly. He stumbles up to Mima Russa, and he just asks her for a favor. At the moment, we don't know what it is, but we quickly find out after watching Vignette close the library. She drops some like huge stone door. It's obviously sealed forever. The pack's never getting in there. Then we see Mima Russa and the redhead chick, I guess, who's like whatever her right hand, her apprentice.
Oh, who, my notes say, who is that chick?
Yeah, we don't know who she is.
She looks
sad,
though.
She was in one other scene earlier.
She looks very sad watching this happen.
Yeah,
and we're still kind of in that quiet. We're not hearing people's voices. It's just we're kind of all still disoriented. And Mima Russa whispers in Vignette's ear, to which Vignette reacts horribly to. And we know that Philo has unfortunately done the deed and proceeded with the plan to fake his own death.
Okay, I'm coming in. Back to my point, we're saying that Vignette's all pissed at him for faking his death. Now, Mima comes up to her and says that Philo's dead, and back in this kind of day, obviously, there's no technology where you can prove that. So
Philo's not like posting on social media.
Yeah, she has a lady, Mima, who she trusts, but she just says, hey, I saw Philo die. So 7 years later, you find out Philo's alive. Couldn't it be one of those things where you're just like, well, maybe she didn't see the right person die. Maybe she just saw it explode and he just didn't die. Why wouldn't she also have, oh, he's alive kind of thing? It's not like she saw him die. She didn't see blood. He didn't say like, here's an arm. Give her this arm and say it's mine.
I don't think it's worth even thinking about because.
Drop it.
I would just say I love how much you're riding for Philo, but I think she has every right to be mad at him, and she can deal with that anger.
Knife to throat, man.
I'm also not saying that Philo is a good dude for doing that specific act, but I think with the mindset of Vignette's one of her best friends being Tourmaline told her to do this, the moment where the pact was attacking, this would probably increase the chance that Vignette lives. When he weighs all those options, I think it was fine.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think the point saying that before the pact attacks the Mimisary, he was down because for the Bürgersmann, the war's over. If he's thinking we're going back to the Berg, I don't want to go back to the Berg. Let's just do us two. But now they're currently getting attacked. So he's like, fuck. This is the moment that Tourmaline was warning about.
Yeah, because if they're getting attacked, he has to survive it because she's not going to leave. So yeah. Whatever. I'm not saying she shouldn't be upset or mad. I was saying knife to throat. I'm going to kill you.
That's her personality. Threat. She's just fucking around. Yeah. She's not for real. But the last thing we get in the past is after Vignette gets this news, she's getting flown off by Mima Russa and that rando. We flash to Darius, who's telling Philo, we have to go. We have to ride away right now. And that's when he jumps on the horseback with him and they ride off. And this is when Philo turns around and stares at the city for the last time. And that pushes us right back to Carnival Row modern time.
Snap back to reality. Oh, that goes gravity.
Oh. Yeah, and so it's just a lover spat. But this is kind of a moment where I thought he looked up and saw Tourmaline as well. And I was like, ooh, I wasn't sure.
He did see Tourmaline.
Yeah, but I don't know if he's actually clocking in as like, that bitch, she's the one who told me to do this. And now I'm in trouble.
Well, they know each other, I thought we said.
No, they know each other. But she's saying, is Philo mad at Tourmaline for putting the idea? Because now, but no,
he's
I don't think.
I
don't
no,
think
I'm just saying.
Because I feel like that would have been.
But Vignette agrees to, after she sees Philo standing outside the Tetterby Hotel, she agrees she's going to go talk to him. And when she flies down, they start rehashing what we just saw a little bit. And I personally think she's rightfully pissed that Mima Russa lied to her.
He didn't want her to die for him. And it's the classic, any sort of breakup, they're going back and forth. I mean, death is not classic. But also, the line of him trying to convince her that what he why he did it was for the right reasons. And he's like, I was your weakness. And she was like, you were my hope. You were what was giving me hope. I mean, she was living in this fey land, and sure, outsiders might visit this fey land and think, wow, this is great. It's like freeing, whatever. But she was living there and she met this guy. She fell in love, whatever it was. You were my hope. And I love this line. We would have done more than survive. We would have had a reason to. And I'm like, isn't life worth more than just surviving? Don't we deserve better than that? Clark, yeah. Lexa, kiss.
The 100, baby. We also cover the 100 for everyone listening.
Boy, fucking Dewey.
She's right, though. I mean, they were in the middle of a war. And now, you know, he left and she was still in that war for 7 years.
Right. And he's like, I'm a broken thing, which I like that, too. He's like, I'm broken.
Yeah.
Like, oh, really? I thought that was like classic fuckboy excuse.
Well, it is. It is. Yeah. And then she's like, shit, bro, you need therapy. I will pray for you.
I honestly didn't see that coming. And I kind of knew from my first watch, but just how she treats that whole situation. She says, I know you're lost, but I now know that you're not meant to be with me. And she just flies right away.
I kind of thought right there was going to be a reconciliation by the end when he says, I'm a broken thing.
Yeah.
You naive son of a bitch.
Yeah.
So now that is the end of the episode, what do you guys think? Where do you think their path is going to go?
If they don't end up together, I'm rioting.
No. Okay. First of all, Darius is going to be a werewolf again. I want him to freaking run train. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah. Okay. But also, where does that come in? I want to talk about the love stuff.
No, I think they're going to reconcile. I'm not really sure. So we know that there's a mystery looming with the evil entity.
And Piety, I mean, like, you know, Piety and Jonah is a thing. The evil entity is a thing. We have the Black Raven's a thing. We have. It's just trying to rehash all the mysteries because we just stepped away from
it. Yeah, I really, like I said in episode one of the pod, but of two of the show, that the Black Raven really intrigued me, and I hope it's a thing, but I can't see how they're going to really be okay working together. They had that conversation where he was like, you threatened to say that I was a fey to people. And she's like, you know, I would never do that. But unless he comes out as fey at somehow, I don't see how he joins any kind of is okay with the Black Raven situation. So I feel like maybe she will stay on that path a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got 9 episodes, right?
Eight, I think, total.
Okay, 8 episodes. So I'm going to say episode 5, they're going to reconcile.
And we haven't even, obviously, we completely stepped away from the siblings, the Imogen and Ezra and Mr. Graeus. Sure. That's going to have to come into play at some point. There's a lot going on. And now we can finally jump back into modern day Carnival Row. I think the political stuff with Ryder Bane, that stuff's going to start picking back up. You guys are going to now have a little bit more affinity to what's going on with Philo and Vignette. Like, all that stuff's going to be a lot more important.
I'm guessing, trying to think, and this is just off the top of my head, how their storylines can connect. Maybe the entity, the monster, does something to the Black Raven, or what's the lady's name who heads the Black Raven?
Dahlia.
Maybe she puts her on the case for their side of things, too. I'm just trying to think of how they could connect at a later point. Because really, if you just think about it, besides the fact, unless he just keeps coming back to her saying, take me back, they're on totally different paths.
Yep.
So, can't wait.
Yeah, this episode just sets you up to have more of a stake in these characters moving forward. Mm-hmm. Even Tourmaline, moving forward, those three and Darius, I guess. So those four are the ones you were going to keep going with. And it just makes you love them even more. So I'm ready to go. The first two, I liked this show. Now I could say I'm into this show. Mm-hmm. I think there was a very clear divide between the first two, which I liked, and then this one, which I'm saying, okay, I'm in.
I like to think that the beginning is now over and we're ready to start for real. These next 5 episodes are going to be the story. The scene is set and now we're ready to dive into this fucking mystery.
I'm in.
Kai?
I love it. I mean, I just like what Luke had said earlier in this episode, is that watching this episode makes you like the first two episodes, especially like on a rewatch, because you just have that deeper connection with the characters. Because obviously, you know, it's Orlando Bloom, Kara, and they're attractive, and we know them from TV shows, and they're kind of interesting characters in the first two episodes. But this episode is where it's like, all right, these are the fucking homies. Like, let's see where this goes.
I like to think that when they're reading the script, Orlando's like, episode 3, I'm in, baby. I'm doing this show.
He's going to mess up with the touching of the wings. Reshoot.
Yeah.
I also, we didn't talk about it, that scene. I feel like if he's like a trained soldier, he totally would have shot her. He's like expecting someone to be there and he has the gun, and then they turn and like knife right to his throat, and then he would have been like, trigger.
I thought that it was a teasing play scene, like they both knew they were going to be there. But then also he was way too like suspicious looking with his gun. It was weird because
he's a smooth criminal.
I would have been guns blazing in that.
I would agree.
That was a weird scene. I felt the same way.
Who I else had were you no expecting? Idea what was happening. None. I was like, why are they both doing this?
He's expecting to like get ready to kill someone. Next thing you know, he's dropping that gun and dropping those trowel.
It's the best because we completely just bulldozed it and didn't care because, of course, we were like, tits and banging. Let's go.
Oh, yeah.
Like that.
Well, we get his pecs.
We're shallow.
There you go, Kyle. Tits from let me both hear
finally. It took me to the end of the episode to talk about fucking Philo's pecs, but they're nice.
That's the best way to sign off. Is
yeah, bro.
End on the pecs. He looks phenomenal.
Should we do a quick back to Mary?
Yeah, why not?
All right, we're going to do Vignette, Tourmaline, and what's her name?
Portia. Dahlia.
Portia.
Ooh, Dahlia. Oh, not yet. Dahlia's a future one. All right.
Yeah.
Portia,
and
huh?
And Portia, huh?
Huh?
All right, I can go first because I got my answer already.
Go ahead.
I'm actually going to kill Vignette because she's going to be a lot of drama to deal with, as you can see, with everything Philo has to work with. I'm going to marry Portia because I felt she was the most ready to be a house. Like, she was ready to...
Don't say housewife. I'll take your ass.
She was so ready to be domestic.
She totally was, though. Are you kidding me? She's a server, like in the freaking house, and
she's a business owner.
She was over her soldier boyfriend, and she's ready to settle down with Philo. I think she's ready to go. And Tourmaline's just a hot whore.
She was married before.
I was gonna say, I'm gonna step in and say I'm also going to marry Portia, and she's gonna pick me because it was her husband. I'm a better listener, clearly. I'm gonna bang Tourmaline because that's like her job. Technically, she's in dire straits, but that is her job.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I'm going to kill Vignette as well.
Okay. So I'm also going to marry Portia. I feel like everything about her, it's Philo that has the baggage and the issues. I think she's all good with, you know, going all in on a relationship and things like that. I am not banging Tourmaline because I don't want any STDs, man. I don't know what's going on, especially back then. But I will bang Vignette. I want to see if I can get those wings going.
You better stop.
That's a good point. I like that.
Okay. I am marrying Tourmaline. What a hot, hot girl. She could get tested, get negative, and then come live with me. She'll switch her job after she's living with me. I'm going to bang Vignette because yo.
Heard that.
Yo.
Warm up for Tourmaline.
And then I'm going to kill Portia because, one, I could barely ever remember her name. And, two, I just think she's pretty boring compared to our girls, Tourmaline and Vignette. I mean, you're going to live a very interesting life if you marry either one or bang either one.
You know, and I killed Tourmaline, but now that I'm saying it, if you have Vignette and Tourmaline both alive in that same universe without killing one of them, you know, they were lovers before. There's a chance you can get
threesome.
You know?
Oh, true. I thought I was thinking of the opposite way. Like, there's a chance they could rekindle that later on.
No, they're going to just join us.
That is a slippery slope if you're going to get like, hey, bring your ex over for a threesome.
Yeah, right.
Truly, that's bad news.
All right, Kyle, hit it.
All right, so that is all she wrote. Episode 3, Carnival Row, Kingdoms of the Moon. I really think we made the right decision to make it a standalone. Lots of good backstory. Lots of good sexy time. We get good Darius backstory, which is very important to me personally. If you like what you heard, make sure to A, stick with us, follow along. B, subscribe on Apple or Spotify, Bingetown TV. And C, follow us on Instagram or Twitter, same shit, at Bingetown TV. We have a whole catalog of shows we cover. You know, we do Spartacus, The 100, The Haunting series, The Mandalorian now is coming out. So, you know, you can catch us with that. You know, there's so many at this point, I don't even remember it. So thank you for listening. We love you guys.
Love you.
Peace.
For the birds.